Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from paint to polyethylene. In this week's show, we're talking about the art of chemistry. We'll learn about a 19th century chemist who turned a dye experiment into a lifelong art project, and meet two New York artists who are crossing the boundaries between art and science. That's all coming up on today's episode of Distillations. If you've ever seen a Red Sox game on television or been to Fenway Park, you probably noticed the giant flickering Citgo sign hovering over the green monster in left field. When Citgo tried to remove the sign in 1983, the company was surprised to find that the community objected to the possible loss of what had become a major pop art landmark. But 3 years ago, something did change. The Citgo sign's lighting changed from neon to LED. The LED lights are more energy efficient and easier to maintain, but they'll never have the classic appeal of neon. CHF's Audra Wolf has more in today's Element of the Week.
The element neon was first identified at the end of the 19th century, along with two other noble gases, argon and krypton. Under normal conditions, neon is an inert, colorless gas. But soon after its discovery, the French inventor Georges Claude noticed that it had a curious property. He found that applying an electrical charge to a sealed glass tube of neon produced a distinctive reddish-orange glow. In 1923, Claude introduced Americans to the idea of neon advertising, with two signs reading Packard for a Los Angeles car dealership. Neon signs soon became a distinctive part of the American landscape, glowing in shop windows and lining highways across the country. Although true neon lighting comes in only one color, reddish-orange, manufacturers have developed a rainbow of colors using the other noble gases, mercury, and phosphor coatings. More recently, artists have begun to experiment with neon's ability to catch the eye and stimulate the senses. Artists like Eric Ellenberger in New Orleans and Craig Kraft in Washington, D.C., combine the skills of glassblowing, metalwork, and sculpture to create luminous abstract and figurative designs. We've put links to these artists' websites on our blog. Be sure to check out their light sticks, sculptures, and jellyfish designs online. Love it or hate it, neon has transformed the visual landscape of both American advertising and the art world. And that's it for the Element of the Week. I'm Audra Wolf.
The 19th century German chemist Friedlieb Ferdinand Runge is probably best known for his work with caffeine and quinine. But while these plant extracts were Runge's first love, his second great interest was color. He intertwined the two in his doctoral thesis on indigo, which at the time was an important textile dye. Runge even conducted some early experiments in the 1830s on dyes derived from coal tar, decades before William Perkin synthesized the brilliant purple dye mauveine. You can hear this experiment recreated in our color episode from a few weeks back. Runge spoke passionately about his fascination with color. This from an 1850 publication.
Suddenly, a new world of formations, shapes, and color mixtures displayed themselves, which I could naturally never imagine, and which were also contrary to all expectations. Thus, their reality surprised me even more.
Aaron McCleary has more in this commentary.
In the 1850s, Friedlieb Ferdinand Runge observed that a colored liquid, spotted on filter paper, will spread and separate, leaving a more deeply colored center surrounded by lighter rings. This phenomenon could be used to analyze solutions and reactions. But to Runge, the effect possessed an aesthetic as well as a scientific dimension. He began to call these filter paper images self-grown pictures, and soon abandoned his scientific studies for more artistic exploits. By 1855, in fact, Runge was almost entirely focused on these colorful amoeboid shapes. As he explained in his second collection of these images, his goal was to exploit this art of painting and to obtain ever more perfect and expressive pictures. These images are quite beautiful. There are two copies of Runge's second collection in Philadelphia, one at CHF and one in the Library of the American Philosophical Society. I was stunned by this work the first time I saw it, by the complexity of the patterns and the depth of the colors, 150 years after it was produced. Runge's books contain dozens of original images created by children that Runge trained. Each image is carefully attached to the backing page by hand. Every page features two identical self-grown pictures, Runge's way of demonstrating that the force that created these images was precise and regular. For Runge, the spreading, separating colors were driven by some vital force, an idea that reflected the German romanticism of the time. Runge wrote,
"I believe that in the formation of these pictures, a new, until now unknown force is active. It has nothing in common with magnetism, electricity, or galvanism. It is living within the substances. I name this force the driving force for formation, and consider it as a sign of the vitality working in plants and animals."
To those with a more analytic bent, Runge's self-grown pictures could be seen as precursors to paper chromatography. Like Runge's images, paper chromatography relies on the capillary action of filter paper to separate substances. But whatever Runge's original intent, analysis ceased to be the point for him early in his experiments with colored liquids and paper. The strangely compelling, colorful blobs he produced took on an artistic life of their own. For Distillations, I'm Erin McCleary.
Erin McCleary is CHF's curator of exhibits. And special thanks to Ron Brashear, the voice of Friedlieb Ferdinand Runge. Ron is director of the Othmer Library of Chemical History. For pictures of Runge's self-grown images, along with links to past episodes of Distillations, check out our website at distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Back in the 1950s, kids played in their rooms with ChemCraft lab sets, mixing ammonium, red dye, and calcium carbonate into bottles and beakers, their parents hoping all the while that the house wouldn't blow up. Today, adults with a fondness for chemistry are playing with biochemical structures like proteins and canvas, for art's sake. Distillations producer Lisa Gray has more.
Tucked away in the financial district of Manhattan, painter Steve Miller developed his works spiraling inward, based on the research of biophysicist Rod McKinnon.
In this one here in the other wall, you've got a bubble image of a protein. You're looking through a helix structure that's going down into space. You've got the ribbons of amino acids on either side. Those lozenges are carbohydrates. And then you have, underneath it all, you have a notebook of Rod's pages that I've silkscreened onto the canvas.
Rod McKinnon won the 2003 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for his studies of how the movement of charged ions across the membranes of proteins to cells generate nerve impulses. Miller was interested in creating a visual language using McKinnon's research. Miller used McKinnon's models, notebooks, and access to Brookhaven Laboratory's X-ray crystallography machines.
Really, it's about creating a space that you don't know about that your mind can go into. And through that passage of entering that space, you might get more curious about, what am I looking at? What's this about?
Seeing McKinnon's words and equations across a canvas, superimposed with digital photographs and spray-painted images that at first seem abstract, a viewer is reminded of Da Vinci's notebooks, in which science and art converged, laying the foundation for modern scientific illustration. Science and technology continue to dominate much of today's culture. Artist Dove Bradshaw uses the visual changes of combined natural elements to represent science in the art world. For her piece, Six Continents, she used the chemical reactions of various salts with water.
The salt works came out of the idea of dropping water on stone because I wanted to make sculptures that would change shape.
Yeah. Explain this one, because there are different, almost layers. You have different rounds.
So it looks almost like a target. Mm-hmm. At the mouth, where the hole is bored, in this case, the water drops continuously. It drops about 7 drops a minute. And so there's a chance for the water to drop and reabsorb in the salt.
The salt started white or started
brown? It started brown. And so there's a ring of white at the mouth, mm-hmm. and then there's a ring of white at the base. The reason why it's at the mouth and the base is that at the mouth, the water is dropping and it's wet. And at the base, it's also wet because the water drops through the hole and then oozes sideways on the base of the mound and creates another ring. But that's one kind of salt.
Did you have an expectation of what would happen with them?
I purposefully chose salts that had different colors. I got pink salt from Chile. It's iron that's giving it that pinkish color. Green salt from the Dominican Republic. That was copper. Then from Ireland, I got really rich chocolate brown salt. There's earth, but it's other minerals mixed in these are all minerals in the salt that are pollutants. They're not used for table salt is all for snow melt. It took about 2 years to gather the salts because I wanted these different colors. One day,
and due to all the residual minerals in the salts, each Sugar Hill salt mound looks like a different mountain or mouth of a volcano, representing each continent around the world. Attracted to new ideas and new media, these artists are changing the way we see and understand science. And whether you're thinking about proteins, DNA, or color, scientists and artists are both curious, looking for solutions to problems and a means to showcase the evidence. I'm Lisa Gray for Distillations.
Lisa Gray is a reporter based in New York. You can see photos of the artist's work on our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. And that's it for this week's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation is from Bo Malmstrom, member of the Nobel Prize Selection Committee. The beauty we experience when we enjoy the exquisite form of a flower or a bird is a reflection of a microscopic beauty in the architecture of molecules. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.